Welcome to the Convivial Society, a newsletter about technology and culture, both broadly conceived. Broadly is an important modifier, as the nature of this installment's more meditative tone will demonstrate. This post also comes in at around 1,000 words, a length of post I'd like to include in the mix more often. Of course, I cheated by throwing another 300 words in the footnotes. Speaking of which, I'm going to try a little experiment in this installment. I'm going to read the footnotes at the end of the essay. You can tell me whether that works well or not. Now, if you are newish to the Convivial Society, and this post seems a little odd to you, consult footnote number 2. As always, thank you for reading. Learning to receive the day. Last March, I found myself walking a wooded path just as the sun was setting. To my surprise, as the light of day gradually withdrew, I experienced an involuntary easing of the tension I had not even realized I was carrying around my neck and shoulders. Muscles relaxed, my breathing slowed and deepened, but what most caught my attention was that I did not consciously intend any of that. It seemed to happen simply because my body was attuned to aspects of the environment that signaled a time for rest and renewal. This set me to thinking about how infrequently I enjoyed such an experience of gradual transition from one part of the day to the next, from one state of mind and body to another. With help from the late Czech philosopher Erazim Kohak, I went on to reflect, probably inadequately, on the meaning of the transitions from agricultural to industrial to digital time in a newsletter installment that's now about a year old. We are not only creatures of light, Kohak counseled his readers. We are creatures of the rhythm of day and night too is our dwelling place. I recall all of that now, nearly a year later, to introduce a brief companion reflection anchored to the other end of the diurnal cycle, the break of dawn and the rising of the sun. In this case, I found myself taking a 2-hour drive southbound on the interstate beginning around 6 a.m. When I left, it was still completely dark without even the moon to dimly illuminate the sky. Given the subject of a previous installment on the theme of silence, I'll note that in this drive, I chose to ride in silence. No radio, no podcasts. It was good. Around 6:30 or 6:40, I noticed the first bit of light appearing along the eastern horizon. This light was gentle and at first barely perceptible, manifesting mostly as a trace of pink coloring a bit of the sky, the first intimations of the arrival of rosy-fingered dawn in Homer's memorable epithet. There was a gentle beauty in what was unfolding, enough to offer some unlooked-for, although welcome, consolation. But that is not what set me to thinking. As the time continued to pass and I continued to safely steal gazes at dawn's progression, I was again struck by the gradual nature of the affair. The light filled the sky, and the new day arrived in unhurried and leisurely fashion. I could not rush it along or urge it to pick up its pace. I could not make it answer to my demands, should I have had any to make. All I could do was to wait. It recalled the somewhat archaic phrase, to receive the day. It is not, I don't think, a phrase we are likely to often hear. But these were the words that gathered around my experience as I reflected upon it. So much of the way we carry on each day, empowered by our technological array, encourages us to presume an extraordinary degree of control and power over the world. Indeed, the project of technological modernity was explicitly pursued under the banner of just such a mastery over nature. And, by and large, its achievements have been real and substantial. If perhaps also precarious, unevenly distributed, and freighted with costs that are becoming increasingly evident. But the sun is gloriously indifferent to my desires and pretensions. It cares not whether I would slow or speed its arrival, a fact that, and this is a crucial point, eludes my apprehension most days of the year because I am simply not paying attention, or even situated so that I could pay attention. But there I was, up at O-Dark 30, careening down the highway, and unable to resist the lure of the beautiful display unfolding out my window. An aside. I alluded above, incidentally, to the fact that I was driving in silence. I wonder now whether this was not a more important condition than I initially recognized. I suspect that were I listening to music or to a podcast, I would still have noticed the increasingly resplendent sunrise, but I do wonder whether I would have thought about it, reflected on it, sought its meaning, the thing Hannah Arendt argued that all thinking was ultimately after, had silence not prepared and inclined me to do so. So I noticed with pleasure and considered with profit that I could do nothing but wait on the light and attend to its arrival. I could not rush the day or command it. All I could do was receive it, and better yet, receive it with humility and gratitude. And it was good for me to feel this deeply, to be formed in this way. In one sense, of course, I would have affirmed the relevant propositions had I never taken this drive. But it is one thing to assent or even to articulate a proposition. It is quite another, as it turns out, to perceive a truth, if we may call it so, viscerally and poetically, as it was manifested in this compelling intermingling of mind, body, and world. This, too, is a message of the medium. And, of course, the sun finally did arrive near the end of my journey, bearing one final message. Dickinson was right to observe, "The truth must dazzle gradually, or every man be blind." To experience the gradual arrival of the day in this way, to learn what it means to receive the day, is also to receive another seemingly paradoxical gift, the gift of a beginning and the possibilities that come with it. Night buried yesterday. Now we rise to something new. If waiting on the day suggests a constraint, a lack of power to effect our will, it is nonetheless such waiting that then discloses to us the gift of freedom, the gift of knowing, in an empowering and vivifying manner, that today need not be as yesterday was. Footnotes. In the first footnote, I noted that I was grateful to Jeff Johnson, the host of Nature Junkie Radio, for interviewing me about my experience that I opened this installment with. That episode came out not too long ago, and you can find the link to it in the initial post. Footnote 2. A clarification after noting that I was about to write about the sunrise. I'm possibly overly sensitive to the fact that many of you have signed up recently, possibly under some hazy impression that I write about technology, and may at this point be wondering where this is going and who told you that I wrote about technology anyway, and what were they thinking? Fair, fair. This is why I say that I write about technology and culture and the moral life, all broadly understood. My perspective is that we should certainly consider instances of technology and technological systems in their particularity and concrete specificity, etc. But we should also consider larger patterns of social and cultural change that emerge as our material environment changes, and that we should consider both what can be measured and what cannot be measured, matters of meaning, say, or of moral judgment beyond instances of measurable harm. In fact, the tendency to see and evaluate only what can be measured is just such a larger, hard-to-quantify cultural pattern. Anyway, so yes, this probably reads more like a meditation than a critical essay on technology, but I'm afraid that's just part of what you'll get here from time to time. Footnote 3. A speculative digression on the observation that the sun rises gradually. By contrast, the phenomenology of the switch, or even of the digital binary itself, too speculative perhaps, teaches us both that things will answer to our demands instantaneously, and that all things must either be one thing or the other, and that there's no relation between the two. It is this or it is that. It is on or it is off. The one does not participate in the other. They do not gradually yield from one to the other with an intermingling and participation of being, such as we see in the dawn or evening sky. Footnote 4 simply noted that I had resisted a temptation to oppose receiving the day to seizing the day. Of course, I did put it in a footnote. In the fifth footnote, I noted Lewis's observation in The Abolition of Man that power over nature, meant also power over the human being, insofar as the human being came to be construed as just one more element of nature. And, critically, what this meant in practice was the power of certain human beings over others. End of footnote and end of installment. Thank you for listening.